denne podcasten møter du dansekunstnere og koreografene bak forestillingene som vises på Dansens Hus I Oslo. Her kan du høre om det som ligger bak forestillingene, kunstnerisk ambisjon, og om hva som foregår innenfor dansekunsten I samtiden. I denne delen av andre episode snakker Jan Martens om forestillingen «Any attempt will end in crushed bodies and shattered bones».
First up, I just want to welcome and say thank you to you, Jan Martens, for talking with me today. How would you describe any attempt will end in crushed bodies and shattered bones?
I would describe it as a very manipulative show, in a sense. And it has a very dark title, but at the same hand, it's a very hopeful piece. I think contrast is something which comes back very often also in my work, and that's also here in the title, very dark, but the piece in itself, hope, gives a lot of eagerness to act towards an audience. Yes, it's a performance which has as theme rebellion and protest. There are 17 dancers on stage between different ages, youngest is 17, oldest is 70. The music which I have chosen for the performance are, in one way or another, protest songs, but I wanted to get a little bit away from the most obvious choices. So no Bob Dylan, no Nina Simone, but pieces about protests, which also mirror the ages of the audience. So I think there is, like, the oldest track is from 1960 and the newest is from 2019. And I think as a form, the performance is really an abstract dance piece, and it has two inserts. There are two scenes that I put in the middle of this what you could consider an abstract dance work, which contextualize a lot and which makes you also watch the abstract dance piece in a very different way. That is the form that it eventually has got.
Where does this interest in creating a dance piece about protests come from?
I think politics is always something which I've been busy with. I think in the first works it was not on the surface. It was something a little bit hidden. I also really believe in the slow and silent way of protesting. I don't believe in creating chaos but I've noticed that during the works, it's been during the years, I've started to find it much more important to raise my voice in a way, and that started really in 2018 when I created Passing the Bechdel Test, which was a piece with 13 queer youngsters between 12 and 18, in which I noticed also that this young generation, which is a lot talking and expressing themselves these times, that's very hopeful. And on the other hand, I also felt that in conversation with these youngsters, I felt that somehow they also lack a little bit of historical context. Like, for them, it would sometimes seem that there is no progress being made, but then I tell them that in 78 in Switzerland, women couldn't vote yet. They do feel, there is progress being made. So there was this need for me to talk about history, about the fact that things do have to return, that we have to insist, that we have to bring on the same topics. If we think about queer liberation, women's liberation, Black Lives Matter, climate change. I mean, it's not for any reasons we're talking about a fourth or fifth wave feminism. It's because we need to keep on insisting and bringing the same points back to the table. And I think that awareness has also grown within me the last few years. And that's why I think it became so important to make a piece about insisting and about saying it again and again.
And you say insisting being an important factor here. Insisting as in repetition, and repetition as in, you know, the dancing bodies on stage. Repetition is such an important part of contemporary dance, I would say. Do you see the two intertwining in a way?
Yes, very much. For me, it's a metaphor. It's in the piece, like in the, if I consider the abstract dance piece, there is one music work which gets repeated again and again, and it's a concerto for harpsichord and strings by a Polish composer, Henryk Gorecki, who made it really in 1980, the time of Solidarność, also the time that he really wanted to get rid of the communist regime and left his job at the university because he thought that communist regime was interfering too much in the university. So, and then he wrote this beautiful concerto, which has a lot of American influence. It has a very minimalist influence, which I think was a very radical thing to do in 1980 Poland. Like, if you talk about silent rebellion, that's something which nobody can blame him. But on the other hand, you know, to let your communist music being influenced by American influences is quite a big thing. So that comes back, and I also hope that the movement, because indeed the dancers all have created their own material on this concerto, and by repeating it again and again and again, a kind of liberation takes place. So this repetition is never exact repetition. I think not any repetition is always an exact repetition, because as a spectator you also are going to look at different things. You're invited to look, to zoom in, to look at parts of the body or to see what is changing then. And I think, yeah, for me, the repetition in the piece this time has really to do with being a metaphor about, yeah, why, by repeating yourself, by insisting, it is possible to liberate yourself.
I want to get into the dancing body or the performing body. And that body, all bodies, to be honest, being charged with a form of staged political potential. Could you talk a bit about this? Because you were describing earlier the piece as a manipulative piece. What do you mean by that? And can you talk a bit also a bit about this staged political potential?
Yeah, I think a lot of my works are very manipulative because my first experiences in the theater were as a spectator, not as a dancer or as a choreographer. And I think that viewpoint I still carry with me. And it's this manipulation was something which I found very pleasurable as an audience member. You know, sometimes you go into a show and you think, I know where this is heading to. I've seen this before. I understand the language. But then a shift happens and it brings you somewhere completely else. And that I find always the magic. And that's something which I try to do. So I also try to, bring people into a kind of idea that they start to get it, find it boring, or they think like, this is what's going to happen next, but then to bring it somewhere else. And that's, I think, very... that's what I mean with manipulation. The other question you mentioned about everybody having political content or having something to say. It has to do with these questions also, like where do we want theater and dance to go? I mean, we're questioning a lot. How can we find a new audience? How can we, it's a little bit crude to say, but often in Belgium, in the big houses, the audience they have is almost literally dying because they're like very old. Like, how do we bring a new audience in? And that is by mirroring. I think that is really important, that we have people of different ages, people of different backgrounds, different languages. We shouldn't be afraid to be influenced or to find languages that we don't understand. And I think, what I find also important is to question the canon.
Yes.
in music, but also in beauty. Like, what is a beautiful body, and is it possible to redefine that? And that's been really teams I've been busy with, by bringing children on stage. Is it possible, or is it dangerous? Is it pervert to find a child beautiful? Older bodies, other shaped bodies. To look at that and to find it beautiful. Other beauty standards. I think that's what we need and very necessary for health, the health of a younger generation as well.
Yeah. And in this piece, you are working with a large group of dancers, a large group of quite different dancers with different backgrounds. Can you tell me a bit about why you chose not each individual dancer, of course, but why it was important for you to do this?
Well, I think there's been made a lot of progress in a more experimental field, part of the field. Like, if you would look at smaller venues, I think there is a lot of experimenting going on with other different bodies. But what I'm very interested in is, like, how could that change also in bigger institutions, in bigger companies? Like, you don't often see, if there is a big ballet company, there is a kind of, everybody's quite the same, or they have the same training. While I found it an important statement to, with my first big production, to really go also for a corps de ballet, but redefine that corps de ballet. And of course, that takes a lot of investment from everybody involved, not only of me, but also from the dancers themselves, because it also brings them in a space of insecurity to stand next to people who have very different qualities. Normally, when you're in a dance piece, you're all there because you share a same language or the same quality. This was not the case at all. And that's, for me, again, a very important metaphor about, not putting value at the difference of languages. How can different languages, different backgrounds live peacefully together? And how are we not going to say, like, this language is valuable, and this one we should put at the side of society and not take part. That's why for me it was very important to work with this, with as diverse cast as possible. And on the other hand, for me it was also really important to work with dancers, which I've not always been doing, to also show the diversity which exists within the realm of professional dance, and to be able to also give my message through the act of dancing and not only by text or video.
How do you work with such a diverse group of dancers? Because here are dancers who are, of course, the youngest one is 16 and the oldest one is in his or her 30s. No, excuse me, 70s, sorry. Oh my God, that is crazy. 30-year-old dancers? No, I'm kidding. I'm 33. And of course, their backgrounds when it comes to dance, what traditions, what training, how do you work with such a large group?
I think the way we started was very important. There was a lot of insecurity indeed, because a lot of them didn't know each other. So first what we did was, like, organize a kind of Christmas dinner before we started, and then 3 weeks later we would go for our first residency for everybody to be able to meet. And then I think the good thing that we did, like, when we create, we always tour to very different venues, because for me it's also important to see how the work reacts to a space. And I think the really good decision that we made was to start the creation in the beginning of January 2020 in Umeå, which is then a very dark place. But it was in the Opera of Umeå, which were hosting us. It was ideal to be there, because we could cook there, we could cook together, we were all staying in the same house. So there was really a time of bonding, and also a lot of time for talking. I think that is also something which I become much more aware of now, that, you know, studio time is always limited, creation time is always limited, but talking has an important role in in creating as well. So that should be really a big part of your creation as well, to make sure that communication between people, that at first can be not always that easy, make sure that that goes smoothly. And then by working, it's like, yeah, it's also giving the time for everybody to process what I ask and to work on it. The dancers have created a lot of material themselves. So for some, that goes very quickly, and they're used to, by working with previous choreographers, others are not used to create their material themselves. Some are used by a very strict choreographer who tells them what to do. I'm also quite structured, but on the other hand, I leave a lot of openness. While for maybe younger dancers, my way of working was quite strict because there was a lot of counting. So yeah, for everybody, it's indeed, they carry their backgrounds, so they perceive it in a very different way. But for some, can be a very strict way of working, can be for somebody else a very open way of working. Yeah, and so to take the time to bring that together is very important and took a lot of time also.
I want to go into this lightning round of questions where I ask a question and you answer. Of course, you can be more elaborative if you want to and go more in depth. Of course, if there is something there. So first up, what is the best performance art piece you have seen in your life ever?
I think it was a video of Face by Anna Therese de Keersmaeker.
Can I just ask you why it made such an impression?
I was very young. I was 18. I was discovering dance and thing. And then I saw something which I could not explain, but which emotionally charged me completely. And that was a very big aha Erlebnis, we say, like a big moment to not understand why I was touched by something, because it was so abstract, it was so mathematical. And that made me understand the power of art, what it could bring.
What pisses you off?
Too many people with too many opinions, I would say.
Okay, what inspires you?
I think other art forms inspire me the most. Not dance in itself, but I really can get a lot about how a book is constructed, or a comic book is constructed, or a movie. I like to think about formal aspects of other art forms and how I can work with that in my own practice as a choreographer.
Who should play you in the film about your life?
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, this happens every time, by the way.
No idea. This is really hard. Well, I don't know. I think it could be interesting if it would be somebody, if not, would not be like a very famous actor, but somebody who has experienced the same things, or comes from the same village, or has had the same questions and difficulties during life, or
yeah.
Yeah, I think that could be more interesting.
What is
very handsome Timothée Chalamet?
Yeah, Timothée Chalamet, of course. What is the best book you have read ever in your life?
Or
a top three, or a top two, or
yeah. I think A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf is also a really big eye-opener for me.
Can I ask why?
I mean, to see that she was busy with that in the beginning of 20th century, and to be able to write that down so eloquently and funny. I think that's also really beautiful on her work, the humor of that. Yes, again, I mean, also, again, if I talk about the inspiration, of other art forms. I mean, the formality of what you did, Torbido in Orlando, is like, wow, that's so inspiring and so beautiful. If you talk about manipulative things, like, you know, that's beautiful. What's more? Yeah, there is Bart Mouillard, which is a Belgian writer. I don't know. He's translated a lot. He won the Astrid Lindgren Prize.
Okay.
And he wrote what I thought when I was 10 and read them were very weird books. But when I read them now, it again, because I sometimes read them back and it's always so beautiful. He never named things. It was always under the surface. Was one of the first gay writers also openly writing about homosexuality, even though it was also very much under the surface. That was really, I think, very good. And a recent thing I read is, how is it called? This really big book of Anthony Burgess. I need to look it up.
No problem. Anthony Burgess.
Yeah. How is it? Earthly Powers, that's the one.
Earthly Powers or Earth, yeah.
Earthly Powers.
Mm. Nice.
Yep.
What are you focusing on right now? Except Googling, of course, more in general.
I'm actually focusing on getting my new production on the rails.
Ooh. Can you tell us a bit about it or is it too soon?
No, it's I'm gonna make a production for the first time with a ballet, or like a big. I've worked with ballets before, but it's with the Ballet of Flanders. Mm. I'm gonna make a new work, 15 dancers, 2 children, mm-hmm. and a live harpsichord player. Through any attempt, I've discovered the work of Elisabeth Hojnacka. She plays a harpsichord on the Concerto of Gorecki, and then after that I created a solo on her output and on her life. It's like a dance documentary. And now I'm making this new production with a live harpsichord, but also with contemporary repertoire for the. And so I'm trying to think about sonography, which music to choose, what to do on the music, what is going to be the overall dramaturgy of the piece. So that's where I'm very much busy with.
Mm. Exciting. What are you training on at the moment?
Training, like physically training?
Training can be so much.
I'm trying to get through The History of Sexuality by Foucault, which is really
right.
Hard.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up yet. That's what I'm studying. I'm also reading, but it's not so much of a study. It's a lot of fun to read it. This book on David Hockney's latest works, Spring Cannot Be Cancelled.
Oh,
which is also very beautiful to read. Mm. And training. I try to swim again a bit more. It's really good for my body.
Mm.
Stay in shape, but unfortunately I'm not training enough. I think
none of us are, to be honest. We have to be paid in a company to do that. What is the best film you have ever seen? This is the last one.
A very hard question, but I can say that the latest one I saw which really blew me off was Power of the Dog by Jake Campion. I think that was really, really, really strong movie.
I have a few more in-depth going questions before we finish up here. And I'm going to continue talking a bit about groups of dancers. As you also said now, you are working with more of a traditional ballet company. Ballet Flanders. And in dance, we usually see large groups of very similar bodies on stage who often also move synchronized. So I just want to know, what do you think of this more traditional spectacle of dance?
I'm starting to see also interesting things in it. Mm-hmm. It took me a very long while. I was really, when I was studying, I think it's also very normal when you're a young artist that, you know, everything what you see is bad, and you're like, you want to put yourself against it and counter-react on it. And I think that was really useful and important also to do that. And on the other hand, I'm also trying to, where does change happen? That question, you know, if we talk about protests, where does change happen? Is it in the big institutions or not? And so there is an interest, yes, to go there. And I think equally, and it's reciprocal, is that the good English word? Like, I also feel that the big institutions are opening up for more experimental makers. So there is also an openness, and often I think the openness from a new artistic director is maybe not already seeping through in the sometimes very old school administrative ways of how things are working. But I think a lot of progress is made. I'm very happy to see that Gisèle Vienne is making for Ballet de Lyon, that Ballet de Marseille is inviting people such as Lucinda Childs, but also Una Doherty, which I think is great, like to have that mix. I think a lot of things are happening, and maybe the two worlds are growing a little bit more closer towards each other, independent, smaller field and bigger productions. I mean, also in Scandinavia, you know, with Kullberg and with Göteborg, I mean, there is a lot of things happening. In which you cannot really talk anymore about a corps de ballet. And on the other hand, I think, how great would it be if I could start a company with, for example, these 17 dancers, and if we could invite people to make work on them, or is that a new way of thinking about a corps de ballet? Like, how diverse can it really become? And there's always work to do, diversity. There's been work being done on it, but there is still, you know, it can grow and grow and grow.
Lastly, the title, Any Attempt Will End in Crushed Bodies and Shattered Bones. Can you please explain what it comes from, and maybe also what it means for you today after you've created this piece?
Yeah. Well, I bumped on the title because it's an existing quote by the Chinese president. It was a bit longer. He said, any attempt to divide China will end in crushed bodies and shattered bones. And he said it in October 19 during the protests in Hong Kong. And I read it on CNN. And when I read it, I thought, okay, there's going to be a lot of reaction towards it. But actually, there was none. And that made me think on how used we are to violent language, and how we just shrug our shoulders and go on, how that really becomes a very daily event, that we run into violent language on social media, but also, of course, the presidency as Trump's doesn't do any good. And I wanted to talk, and it also takes a big part in the performance, how violent language is just everywhere nowadays, and the danger of that, how quickly violent language can turn into actual violence. If we look at Trump on the Capitol, he gives a speech and 2 hours later, you know, like was for me also to talk about that. I found important in the performance.
This is a very general question, but how have you, as a person, as a choreographer, as a dance maker, kind of changed throughout the process of this project?
I think I've become a lot more aware of what creation actually enhances, and that it's not just the creative process, but also the talking and the social side of it. It's also what I like about being a choreographer, is that my tool are people and not paint, but it's a social process. And it's, I think also it made me realize that if you want to do things well, you need time. Because of Corona, the premiere was 15 months later than expected, which made that I could overthink a lot what I was making. I think that is, that time is quality. I think that's really became more clear to me. Yes, and that it is possible to build a community of 17 people who at first hand don't have a lot in common. That's something also I learned.
Great.
That I'm proud of and happy with, yeah.
Dansens Hus podcast en in-house produktion laget av formidlingskonsulent Jonas Øren. Musikken skapt av Basmo Beats, og mitt navn Cécé Kolstad.